This is part one of a two-part interview. This is an interview with John Howells, whose more formal name or title is Lieutenant Colonel John Howells, retired. He's Secretary of the Museum of the New South Wales Lancers Memorial Museum Incorporated, which is in Parramatta. That's where we're talking today. And this is part of an oral history project on horses in inner Sydney. The date is the 11th of October 2007, and Margot Beasley interviewing. So, John, if I may call you that, I would like first to talk about how we come to be in Parramatta, but we're actually talking about Light Horse in Sydney, in inner Sydney. And there's a long historical trace between these two geographic areas, isn't there, and this particular unit.
That's right. The unit that we're talking about is currently called the 1st 15th Royal New South Wales Lancers. It's a light cavalry unit with the Australian Army, currently equipped with cross-country vehicles to perform a reconnaissance role. It goes back to 1884. In the latter part of 1884, venerable citizens of Sydney came together to form a cavalry unit, a horsed unit. The impetus was really in and around the campaign in the Sudan, and it was seen that a cavalry unit would be worthwhile for the defence of New South Wales. It was New South Wales, no Commonwealth of Australia. And they came together initially in the Oxford Hotel, which sat in Queen Square. And interestingly enough, my great-grandfather was the publican, I think, at the time. They met there and elected one Captain Malcolm Melville MacDonald, who was late of the Indian Army and who, interestingly enough, was 65 at the time, to be the commander of this unit, which initially was called the Sydney Light Horse. Their first parade as such, and they were armed with sabres and uniforms from the New South Wales Mounted Police, was on the 3rd of March 1885, when they escorted the Governor of New South Wales, Lord Loftus, to the ceremony where the troops departed for the Sudan. So
they escorted him, but they didn't actually depart themselves.
They escorted him, but they didn't depart themselves. Interestingly enough, the units that went, which were infantry and artillery, they saw no service. They got there and it was all too late. But it was very patriotic on behalf of the citizenry of New South Wales to send their soldiers.
Could I just ask, how was this funded? It was effectively, the Light Horse was like a militia.
It was militia.
That is, like citizen force.
And it wasn't paid at the time.
Who funded it?
But the government paid for uniforms and for weapons, and the weapons were held centrally. The actual soldiers themselves came along with their horses.
And who would they have been, these boys?
Well, The officers had a sprinkling of those who were former British officers and had served usually in India, because a lot of people had come out from India. There were other youngsters who were just brought in. The senior NCOs also were, or the non-commissioned officers, that's the sergeants and warrant officers. These guys also had experience quite often in the British Army in India. The youngsters who joined were just interested in becoming soldiers. In the same way as our young men are interested in becoming soldiers now. The thing that I suppose you've got to think about is that there was a certain glamour in a unit that had horses, and that horses filled a role that I suppose cars do now. And so what you had were young men who would have a horse, and a spirited horse at that, if they could afford it. And that horse would fill the role that a young man's car would fill today.
And they'd like to make use of that
horse
off on the horse.
And this allowed it, because they were then taken and trained in cavalry drills initially.
Where did they train?
Moore Park was the main major aspect.
Wasn't there a connection with Rosebery Park?
There was Rosebery Racecourse and there was Moore Park that they trained. They also their shooting was done not at this point but later on, once the range was established out at Malabar, at that point. It used to be called the Anzac Rifle Range. It was then called, I think, the Long Bay Rifle Range. And they would go out there and they would shoot, and they were trained to shoot. At this time, of course, Moore Park was the edge of the city.
Mm. So we're still talking about the late 19th century.
Yeah. You're talking at that point. If you then look at how the name changes go, a Sydney Light Horse, when other units were formed. Units were formed in Tabulum, all places. Tabulum. It's not far from Tenterfield. And that was formed by H.C. Chevelle, whose son was eventually to become Sir Harry Chevelle. It was... And these guys again were people who were interested in horses. Of course, they were country people interested
rural,
in horses.
Yes, rural, which is a little bit different to urban.
Yeah, but they formed. What they did was, these units were formed sort of in the New England, up as high as the border, down south around Bury, etc. And they became loosely brought together as what was called the New South Wales Cavalry Reserves, of which the Sydney Light Horse was a part. Now, Richardson, Major General Richardson, was the commander of the New South Wales military forces that went to Sudan. When he was in Sudan, he was greatly impressed by the drills of the British Lancers. They carried these bamboo sticks with spikes on them, had a pennant, and... What the history of this particular weapon is basically that it came out of Poland, where Polish regiments had these were armed with lances. They had their flag on the lance, but it was reversed. So instead of the white being over the red was over the white. And when the concept was, as a lancer, that the fluttering of the pennant would distract the other horses, and that when they charged, they dropped their lance and the people could see there were poles because the flag came around the right way.
Complicated.
Quite complicated. But the interesting thing was that they were brought into the British Army because as Napoleon advanced toward Russia, he had come up against Polish lancers who were able to break his squares. The Brits at Quatre Bras, short of Waterloo, came up against French lancers and he brought them into his army, and they could break the English squares. So what Richardson from New South Wales was seeing were these magnificent looking lancers, and he wanted his cavalry to be lancers. So when he came back...
We're talking about the whole of New South Wales cavalry now, or just Sydney?
Sydney. That was the aspect. When he came back in August 1885, he converted the Sydney Light Horse to lancers. Now, initially, they didn't have any lancers, so they used fishing rods with pennants. And so they trained for the first 6 months with fishing rods and pennants. And really, that's all that these guys wanted, because they made excellent governors, escorts, etc.
I don't suppose there are any photographs of them with their fishing rods, are there?
No.
That's a shame.
No, I'm sorry, but it does clearly state in the history that they did use fishing rods. They were... So it was the ceremonial aspect that was picked up. The interesting thing, of course, in terms of fighting by that stage, a lance had lost its effect on a modern battlefield. We'd had...
Even at that stage. Why was that?
Well, basically because between the Waterloo, which is 1815, where you had smoked powder and rifle units were only, there were only very few of them, and all muzzle loaded. So for the most part you had smoothbore muskets which could deliver a ball with an effective range of 50 metres. The first volley was fired and the battlefield was covered with smoke because the powder was smoke. So by the time of the American Civil War in the 1860s, that kind of use of cavalry, including lances, and there were there was one Lancer regiment on the northern side, the 6th Pennsylvania Cavalry, and there were a couple on the southern side, and all they ever did was ceremonial work. Interestingly, they lost their Polish colours. The northern, the 6th Pennsylvania, only had a red pennant on their lance. But they ceased to have any effective use because they were great at carving up squares, but the squares were no longer formed because what they used to do is infantry to defend themselves against cavalry would form a square. They'd take the gun wheels from the gun, roll the gun wheels into the centre of the thing, or bring the guns into the centre if they could do so. They would form a square, which was a defensive square. The front men knelt down with their rifles down, and the rear men stood behind. As they were approached by the cavalry, the rear guys would fire, and then they'd swap over, and that was how they fought their volleys. But of course, because they were in a square with all-round protection, to a certain extent they cut their vulnerability from cavalry, because cavalry was great if it was able to hit you from the edge and just roll you up, which is what Cromwell did at Marston Moor, but then, Naseby and Marston Moor, that's going back far too far. But what the lance was able to do was, because it had this extra reach, it could reach into the square. And could kill further in, could cause casualties further in, and break the square. But by this stage, by the 1860s, men no longer fought in squares. You had the development of the smokeless powder, the almost universal use of the rifle, and of course the breech loading rifle, so that it was fast firing, and even from the 1860s, that was working. By the time that our lances went into battle in the Boer War, the lance per se was useless. But to get back to the titles changes.
Yeah.
So it was the Sydney Lancers and other light horse units in loosely grouped together in the New South Wales Cavalry Reserves. 1888 saw the governor of New South Wales was Lord Carrington. He gave his crest to the New South Wales Cavalry Reserves as a badge. Interestingly enough, at around about this time, the New South Wales government formed two battalions of permanent infantry and one battalion of mounted infantry. Now, mounted infantry was something quite new. Came out really of... there'd been some concepts around on it, but it really came out of the American Civil War. Everyone's heard of Forrest Gump. Well, Nathan Forrest was the southern general that Forrest Gump was named after. Nathan Forrest formed his cavalry not to fight from their horses. And what they used to do was actually, as they went into battle, they would tie their horses to a tree. And so they used the horse to manoeuvre, but as they got into battle, they tied their horses to a tree.
When you say manoeuvre...
Well, OK, if you're...
That's all right.
OK. To manoeuvre meant that they could get into position to fight. If you, I suppose if you think about the fact that if you're going to attack a hill, you will attack it from the most, the best vantage. If you're on a battlefield where your enemy is arrayed and you wish to manoeuvre your forces to get them into position to fight, then until there was mechanised stuff available, the horse was the best way to do it. And so they would use the horse to manoeuvre the guys around to get them into a position. And that's what Nathan Forrest did. Out of that came really this development of mounted infantry. And by the time the New South Wales government formed its permanent battalion of mounted infantry in 1888, they'd started to develop the tactics. And the tactics basically were that in order to fight, you would form a section of four men, and the four men rode as a section. You saw them riding forward as a section. Three of those were the fighters. The fourth was a horseholder. So if you got into, if they were engaged, then three guys would dismount and the fourth would grab the other three horses and move the horses to a position of safety. So that once whatever fight was concluded, that the men could continue to move quickly using their horses. And that's the concept of mounted infantry. Like I said, they formed that in, and out of that was the New South Wales Mounted Infantry. And there were...
quite a distinct category
from lancers and what they then regarded as light horse, because they then regarded light horse as cavalry. Yeah? And they were, for 2 years, they were full-time. And then the government worked out that they really couldn't afford that sort of thing, and so they disbanded both the two battalions of infantry. Was called a battalion of mounted infantry, and all that we were left with as permanent force in New South Wales was a battery, New South Wales Permanent Artillery, which had been formed actually a few years before. It came through to the... This group of lancers come light horse, with the Sydney group essentially lancers. In 1891, a troop of those guys were formed here in Parramatta, and one of the earliest members of that was a guy called James Burns. A couple of other famous people in there, which... without my history book, I can't quite tell, but there were some interesting guys in that. But generally, they were the guys were based in Sydney at Victoria Barracks, and then from 1891 out here at Lancer Barracks at Parramatta. In 1893, we sent a contingent of the New South Wales Cavalry Reserves to Queen Victoria's Silver Jubilee. And just look across there, the medal on the right of Colonel Vernon's uniform there, the green and white, with mm-hmm. the two white and the green. That's the Queen Victoria Silver Jubilee medal. At the Jubilee celebration, every man was presented personally by that medal, with that medal by Queen Victoria. So it must have been quite a thing for a small contingent of... soldiers to go and see this person that they'd only ever read about in a far land to do it. Most of the... when they sent the soldiers across there, the government covered part of the expense, but not all of it. Most of it was covered by fundraising, in the way that we would now raise money for charity, I suppose. In 1894, the regiment... this New South Wales Cavalry Reserves, was brought together in a regiment called the New South Wales Lancers. The badge consisted of Lord Carrington's crest with Waratahs beneath, and we are now the only unit in the Australian Army that still has Waratahs instead of wattle. Most have the national emblem, not the local state one. Waratahs beneath, and of course Crossed Lancers behind. It was silver, and that has an interesting heritage, because earlier, when the uniforms worked out, they gave us the uniform of the Royal Irish Lancers, but with silver badges, and that was about 1887, 88 or so. Out of that, quite interestingly, has come the fact that the Australian Armoured Corps per se today all wear silver badges, which doesn't happen in other countries. So out of that, that came that strange thing. And at that point, what you had was this group, and at that the Lancers per se had stretched from Bury in the south, mainly along the coast, up into the New England, through up into Lismore. In the Sydney area, they were based at Sydney, at Parramatta, and we had troops at Windsor Richmond and at Penrith. There were troops of the New South Wales Lancers. That then went on in 1897. In 1897, it was another. That was another jubilee for Queen Victoria. 1897, 1898. Not quite certain.
That's
about.
All right. And
we sent another contingent, which went across and took part in tournaments in England and Ireland, and also in the parade. And the big picture you see up there shows.
We're looking
the,
at a. An image from.
From that time. that shows the Lancers, and there was a description in a local newspaper that the New South Wales Lancers were the flower of the parade. By this stage, from about 1890, they had started to use the what became the Australian Slouch hat. Initially...
Were they the first to use it?
No. The Victorian mounted rifles really came the first to use it. And they had it slouched on the other side, because they had different rifles. They had the old Enfield rifles, and they brought them up this way, and so the thing was slouched on that side so that the rifle could go up. By the time our guys got it, because they were carrying swords and lances, etc., they'd actually put it on the other side, and the Lee Enfield had become the rifle which you put on your shoulder that side. And that's why the slouch is there, so that you can get the rifle through. But there were a couple of other interesting things around the uniform. It was khaki, but it wasn't what we would look at as khaki today. It wasn't Australian khaki. It was actually New South Wales khaki. Those two uniforms there are the examples, and slightly red. Had some red piping on it, at least in the more ceremonial ones. The puggaree was red. And interestingly enough, out of that red puggaree, you see the kids, the young cadets of the King's School today, have the
What
red
does puggaree mean?
Oh, the bit round the
on the hat.
The hat, yeah.
The band.
The band around the top of the hat. Sorry. You'll see there the guy is wearing a black cock's plume, and traditionally that goes back to. Our doctor, who was Captain Fiasci at that time, of Sydney Hospital fame, of course. And he was our regimental medical officer at the time. Interestingly enough, he was the first to wear the regiment's uniform in combat, and he did it in 1894 when he visited the Italian troops in Abyssinia, in what's now currently Ethiopia.
Very strange. He had the... The light horse uniform on. How did the when you say the cock's feathers there?
Yeah, from the Italian connection is the Bassigieri, the Italian light infantry wear them, and he suggested them. Now, other units also had plumes of various types. It brings us through then, if we and to follow the name changes. The next name change was actually in 2003 when the Australian Army was brought together. Our regiment had sent brought together...
2003.
No, sorry.
1903,
when the Australian Army was brought together. In after
Federation.
Yeah, after Federation. In 1889, we had sent... The regiment had sent... 1888, the regiment had sent a squadron to Aldershot in England to train with the British cavalry. And that was a regimental initiative. The New South Wales government eventually agreed to pay the soldiers' wages while they were there, but none of their travelling expenses. So the travelling expenses, everything was covered by charity.
Fundraising.
By doing, running fetes, fundraising of all kinds.
Did they do displays and that kind of
thing? Yes, displays, regimental displays, gymkhanas. Would have been in Sydney at Victoria Barracks, would have been out here. They got the money together and they sent the squadron off, and the squadron was really about 80 men went off, and they trained for 3 months with the British cavalry. On the way home, 1899. As they were about to come home, it was about the 10th of October, I think, 1889, and the Boer republics had crossed the borders into the Cape. There was an automatic declaration of war by them, and just as they were about to come home, the day before they were about to come home, the British government declared war on the Boer republics. As they were heading home via South Africa, of course, telegraphed the New South Wales government and said, "Can we stay and fight when we get to South Africa?" When they hit Cape Town, which was the first port of call, there were telegrams there from the New South Wales government saying yes, they could. They could stay and they could fight in South Africa. And that's exactly what they did. The squadron was there, it was reinforced and remained there for until the latter portion of 1900. And interestingly enough, whilst the war continued and a number of soldiers continued to stay on there, the New South Wales government wanted them home. Government wanted them home for that. And we're looking at a picture of the New South Wales Lancers escorting the Governor General of the Commonwealth of Australia, Lord Hopetoun, Martin Place, Sydney, 1st of January 1901. They wanted them home for ceremonial duties for the creation of the Commonwealth. And they...
Did they get them home?
Oh, yes.
That's there they are in Martin Place.
They got them home. But the interesting thing there was that it didn't matter that there was still a war and the war was still going on. By that stage, of course, we had fairly extensive... there were contingents from all over Australia there. As colonial troops, but they wanted them home for that. Interestingly enough, you would have found in that parade as well, in 1898, for reasons that are quite beyond anyone who understood anything about cavalry, the New South Wales government decided it would form a regiment of heavy cavalry. The difference between heavy and cavalry and light cavalry is more around the size of the horse and whether or not they were wearing any armour, but by this stage they didn't wear armour at all, but more around the size of the horse. So they were a heavy horsed unit, whereas it was generally lighter in the New South Wales Lancers. They were called the Australian Horse, and formed around Goulburn, but they also did ceremonial in Sydney and certainly ceremonial here. They had a distinctive, as opposed to the New South Wales khaki, the Australian horse had a distinctive, it was called myrtle green, some strange green uniform, again with the slouch hat, again with a badge that had Waratahs on it, and no crown, which was interesting. Then again, which of course neither did the New South Wales Lancers badge have a crown.
What, when we talk about light horse, what kind of horse are we actually talking about?
Well, eventually it was the, in the Boer War, it was the Whaler, which is a very sturdy Australian stock horse type of horse. I'm not a horse expert, but generally a sturdy Australian stock horse. Mm. And of course, you had right through this time, everything went on horseback. If you see the Governor General there, he's not riding in a car.
He's in a
Landau carriage drawn by horses. All of the escorts, everything, all mounted on horseback. The interesting part there, if you see where that picture is, just outside the GPO, the modern world is developing. You can see the telephone lines, vast numbers of them. You forget, I suppose, what it was like in effect.
Big crowds even, there too, aren't there?
Even when I was a kid, there were telephone lines everywhere, and you don't see that in Sydney anymore now. The difference between that uniform, that's the Lancer uniform with the plastron thing, the red part was red. Got an example here, just put it in the front here. Mm-hmm. That was a particularly Lancer thing. The Australian horse guy is the one there with the myrtle green uniform. Again, with a black cox plume, because by this stage, all New South Wales units had black cox plumes. In 1903, you had the next name change. And basically, it was after the experience of the Boer War, where it was recognised by some pretty bright commanders, because the Australians, really, the likes of Cox, the likes of Chevelle, when they came back, they recognised that when they'd attempted to use horsed soldiers as conventional cavalry, they didn't work anymore. And so, but the mounted infantry side did. And even the conventional cavalry had fought as mounted infantry. Our first engagements over there were sort of, you would ride up, dismount, and, sort of tie your horse up or get someone to hold the horse, and without the formality of the way that the mounted infantry do, and deliver fire from the ground where a man, the difference being that if a man's lying on the ground, he is able to avoid enemy fire. Whereas if he's standing on a horse, mounted on a horse, then he can't. And the horses don't like to lie down quickly. They don't like, they've got to be, it's a big deal to get a horse down. Mm. And whereas men can lie down, they can run and manoeuvre lying down. They can bring fire to bear to allow these guys to manoeuvre. And you can't do that on horseback. But they had no other means of getting the guys quickly around the battlefield. And so that's how they developed it. So this regiment here became the first Australian light horse regiment, and in brackets, New South Wales Lancers. And we had in New South Wales the first Australian light horse brigade, which had three regiments, the New South Wales Lancer Regiment, which is the first light horse, the Australian horse, which was second light horse, and third light horse was the New South Wales Mounted Rifles. And they formed the first Australian Light Horse Brigade in New South Wales. They continued to train. They continued to use their lances ceremonially. So if the governor needed to be escorted to open parliament, It would be a guard from the New South Wales Lancers, armed with the traditional lance, wearing the traditional uniform. And you see these guys here, 1905, the traditional uniform, to do the opening, etc.
So escorts and so on.
Escorts and so on.
And they look pretty splendid, don't they? Well, you can see why they wanted for ceremonial occasions.
That's why they wanted them. They were all the same. Young men joined with your horse. You're actually, by this stage, you were paid, but paid for the time that you were there. You were paid more for your horse than you were for yourself. And so you joined the army with your horse. And through until there was a visit by Lord Kitchener, around about 1910, I think. He was brought out by the Australian government to tell the Australian government how it should set up its armed forces, I suppose. And after that, they had, during that time, they actually did a camp with him there, and we've got actually there's a collection of photographs that show Lord Kitchener looking at the soldiery and what have you. After that, they did do a reorganisation. Didn't affect much what we did in New South Wales. There were some main things. The small arms factory at Lithgow came out of that. But they renumbered the regiments. And the first became Central Queensland, and so they numbered it from Queensland down. And the New South Wales Lancers became the 7th. And by this stage you had the New South Wales Lancers really in Sydney only, because what they'd done was to split them all up regionally. So you had New South Wales Lancers here in Sydney, you had the Mounted Rifles, which I forget the number now, but they were across the border, across the mountains up in around Orange Dubbo, and you had the guys up in New England with their own numbering and what have you, and they were all light horse regiments. No difference between the kinds of regiments at this point.
And so what was the full name of the unit when it became called the 7th?
It was called the 7th Australian Light Horse, in brackets, New South Wales Lancers.